The first thing, though, that I want to talk about, really interesting. Tonight, there's not a ton of news, so I really want to talk about some of the ideas which have been brought to the center lately. And I've been doing this. I've been talking a lot about strategy. I've been talking a lot about the ideas, trying to clarify for people that don't understand what we're really about and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to achieve it. And this is a perfect example of this. So last night on my show, I forget the context exactly. I think we were talking about how Democrats and Republicans came together to compel the release of the Epstein files. You had a Democrat, Ro Khanna, and a Republican, Thomas Massie. And they worked together on this discharge petition, which forced a vote on their bill, which would order the DOJ to release the Epstein files. And I said, isn't that a remarkable blueprint? Isn't that an example of bipartisan cooperation? Republicans and Democrats are at each other's throats. There's gridlock in Washington, longest government shutdown. I said, but this is an example of maybe where the populist left and the populist right can find common ground on something that we all agree is important, which is, in this case, accountability for the oligarchs. That's really what Epstein is about. Epstein is about the pernicious influence of foreign states using their intelligence apparatus to manipulate our oligarchs, our powerful private and public people that have influence over our society. That's what the story is. And Jeffrey Epstein, who was some sort of intelligence mercenary, a go-between with the CIA, MI6, Israeli intelligence, he was gathering blackmail on Western oligarchs, British, American, and other oligarchs, potentially selling that information, working on behalf of intel agencies. To what end? Well, that's why we need to see the files. We're not actually sure the breadth of that network and the substance of what he was gathering on these people and to what end. And so there's a bipartisan consensus on this issue. This bill was passed 427-1 in the House yesterday, adopted 99-1 in the Senate, is going towards the president's desk for a signature. And I said last night, isn't this a blueprint for how the populist right and the populist left can find common ground and actually change society? We can unite against the center. We can unite against the center right and the center left, which have themselves seem to struck a bargain of their own variety. The center right and the center left are collaborating to protect the system. Center right and center left are in favor of the warfare state. Center right and center left protect the oligarchs, money and politics, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, the billionaires. And so I said last night, wouldn't it be a creative way to change how the table is set if instead of the right and the left fighting each other, and we're both disappointed by what we get from Republicans and Democrats, what if the far left and far right united as ordinary people on the basis of overthrowing the oligarchs? And I said, in order for this to be possible, there would need to be a compromise. And the compromise is this. The left is going to have to give up their anti-white polemical rhetoric and policies, the grievance politics. They're going to have to give up mass migration. I said, and the right is going to have to give up this illusory free market, the supply side economics, the free trade, all of that. And so what does a compromise look like? And you tell me how this sounds. We have some sort of national effort to have universal education, universal healthcare. I don't love it. I don't think that's going to work, but I can live with it. And in exchange, we close the borders and we prevent all this mass migration from coming into the United States. On the left, they get what they want. They get their affordability. They get their public transit, education, social safety net, these sorts of public services. But they're not going to be able to have all the mass migration. Maybe they can live with that too. So I say this last night, And the clip goes out on Twitter, and predictably, everybody has something to say, and people are calling this national socialism, which is Nazism. It's Nazi politics. They said, wait a second, you want cheap healthcare and closed borders? You're a Nazi. That's actually national socialism, because you're a nationalist and you're a socialist. It's in the name. That's what a Nazi is. So Dinesh D'Souza, who was born in India, Vivek Ramaswamy, who is an anchor baby and a big pharma scam artist, and many leftists, too, they said, this is Nazi politics. So let me get this straight. Zohran Mamdani wins the mayoral election in New York, campaigning on affordability. He says, we want affordable public transit, affordable housing, affordable groceries, affordable health care, public services. Donald Trump wins the election saying, we want borders. 10 million illegal aliens in 4 years is way too many. We need to stop irregular migration. We need to deport many of the people that are here. We need to do this so we can put American labor first, so that Americans can have access to hospitals and schools, so that the cost of living is not being driven up by this glut of foreigners moving here, so that we still have some recognizable society. And so here I am saying, I have an idea. Why don't we take what people on the left care about, what people on the right care about? Let's just do both. Is that insane? And by the way, people on the right are also dependent on Obamacare subsidies and to some extent food stamps and government services, government contracts. And at the same time, much of what the left cares about is actually hurt by mass migration. How do you have public transit if you got people being lit on fire and stabbed in the throat? How do you have universal health care if you have open borders? Too expensive. Can't do it. So here I come last night saying, okay, why don't we just have cheap health care? Why don't we just have investment in public resources, public services, and let's also close the borders? You know, because if you don't have an infinite amount of people from the third world moving here, maybe it's more doable. Maybe it's more economical than it would otherwise be to have a social safety net. We already have one. Half the country already doesn't pay taxes. Half the country already is getting some form of government transfer in the form of Medicaid, Medicare, supplemental income, food stamps, subsidized housing, like you name it. And you had everybody from the center come in and say, you can't do that. You're a Nazi. That's what Hitler wanted to do. It's like, wait a second. I thought the problem with Hitler is that he did the Holocaust. You know? But now they're telling us, no, you're Hitler if you want to give people health care and close the borders. What? I thought you're Hitler if you want a Holocaust. I don't want a Holocaust. Isn't that the difference? They're telling us you cannot have a social safety net and borders because that's Hitler. Well, I thought the only reason Hitler is bad is because he committed a genocide. What if we just had the closed borders and healthcare without the genocide? Is that possible? Can we have a coherent nation and a government that takes care of its people without creating gas chambers and death camps? I think it's doable. I think we could achieve that, actually. I think that's possible. But it speaks to how politics is designed to work, which is, this is the synthesis that they do not want to happen. They do not want unity between the people. This is how we have an arrangement that is so deeply unpopular, because the right and the left are fighting each other. The right and the left are at each other's throats. And you have poor people, working class people, middle class people, students, indigent, elderly, homeless people. We're all fighting each other. And we're all poor, and we're all being hurt by immigration. We're all being hurt by the free market, free trade, usury, fiat money, inflation. We're all being hurt by this. And so every election, the pendulum is swinging back and forth. And in the meantime, we're getting war. We're getting free trade. We're getting mass migration. We're getting the financialization of the economy. The jobs are being taken by foreigners, whether they're moving here or the jobs are going to China. And you realize that arrangement is dependent, actually, on us fighting each other. And my appeal is not to anti-white dirtbags who are obviously never going to love us. You know, this appeal is not to the far radical left anarchist. It's not for them. When I say, what if we all unite, I'm saying just ordinary people. I think ordinary people are actually not far left ideologues. I think ordinary people, they really do just want affordable living. Like, it's that simple. There's a small minority, I think, on the far left that truly and deeply hate white people. There's irreconcilable differences. It's not to say that non-white people aren't vaguely racist against whites. I think whites are vaguely racist against non-whites. Everyone has that on some level. But the idea that you can't appeal to the masses with a populist message is insane. And by the way, the Democrats tried to do that in 2024. Why do you think Kamala chose, I don't even remember his name. What was the Minnesota, what was his name again? Why did they choose Tim Kaine in 2016? Why did they choose Joe Biden, for that matter, in 2020? Why did they choose, I already forgot his name, in 2024? Why did they put a camo hat for Kamala? It's because they realized the anti-white politics were a liability. And so anyway, I've been thinking a lot about this and realizing there really is something there, but the far right and the far left both have to let go of some of the hangups there. Or you could say, it's better said, the populist right and the populist left both have to let go of some of those hangups. I don't know why Crystal Ball has to call me a Nazi every time she talks about me. I don't know why Cenk Uygur has to say I'm a terrible person every time he talks about me. These are like, you know, we totally disagree with them. Is that helpful to say, you're horrible people? We both don't have power. Hey, Cenk. Hey, Anna Kasparian. Hey, Crystal Ball. Hey, the people at Drop Site News. None of us have power. None of us, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, none of us have power. Is it really helpful for us to be calling each other horrible people and to try to gatekeep the other side in this way? And anyway, so this is part of the conversation I'm trying to get going. And at the same time that I'm talking about this, it's very interesting. At all these various meetings of the organized Jewish community, they're having a very similar conversation. And you're hearing this all the time. Increasingly, when you hear these pro-Israel Jewish advocates, they talk about the crisis of declining support for Israel. The dialectic they always create is the Zohran Mamdani's on the left and the Nick Fuentes's on the right. That's always the thrust. They say the Democrats are controlled by the radical progressives who hate Israel because they're third worldist, because they hate success and they're jealous. They hate successful groups. They're anti-Western. And increasingly now, the Josh Hammers, the Ben Shapiros, the Barry Weisses, they also now speak of the radical right. They call it the woke right. So it's the woke left and the woke right, the populist left and the populist right, the anti-Israel progressives and the anti-Israel Nazis, nationalists. And so it's very interesting. They speak in these terms. They say, we hate Zohran Mamdani. We hate Fuentes. And they're saying this at their gatherings. So as I said at the top of the show, there's been a series of them. You had the Republican Jewish Coalition. You had the Conference of Major American Jewish Organizations, the World Jewish Congress. You had the Tikva Fund, Jewish Leadership Conference. This is a little survey of what has been discussed at those meetings. We'll go over it. This is an article from Information Liberation by the great Chris Menahan, who's been truly exceptional and a great journalist. I encourage everybody to follow him on Twitter. He writes about these gatherings, quote, "The theme throughout the World Jewish Congress, Jewish Leadership Conference, and the Jewish Federations of North America's General Assembly over the past few days was a pining for censorship to suppress Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes on the right and anti-Zionist backers of Zohran Mamdani on the left. Okay, so World Jewish Congress, Jewish Leadership Conference, Jewish Federations of North America's General Assembly. Now, in the first place, before we even get on into what they talked about at these meetings, let's just first say, what else are we supposed to call this other than conspiracy? What else are we supposed to call this other than identity politics? Organized Jewry. Seriously. Because I would love for Tucker Carlson to explain to me. I would love for Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, any of them who deny this, please explain to me. What is this? What are all of these groups? Who are these people? What are they actually? The World Jewish Congress, the Jewish Leadership Conference, the Jewish Federations of North America. What are we to make of this? This is totally unique. There is no other group of people that does this. I'm Italian, Mexican, and Irish. Is there anything comparable for any of these groups? Is there a World Irish Congress chaired by billionaires and bankers? No. Is there an Italian Federation of North America led by billionaires and influential groups? No. This is totally unique. It's unique in terms of the level of organization, how many of them there are, how powerful they are. The constituent members of these organizations have tons of influence as lawyers, as bankers, as Hollywood talent agents, as billionaires. So the amount of power in these rooms, the level of organization, the number of organizations, the extent to which it's truly federated, you've got local chapters, state chapters, regional, continental, and global. So highly organized, highly federated, a concentration of power, and they're organizing around the basis of what exactly? Neoconservative ideology? No. Support for the government of Benjamin Netanyahu? No. Support for the policies of the government of Israel? No. As a matter of fact, they disagree on these things. They disagree on all these things. What are they organizing on the basis of? Well, it's in the name. It's on the basis of their Jewishness. It's that they're Jewish. What does that mean? Well, ask them. Are they all religious? No. Not all of them are religious, and if they are, not all of them have the same religious sect. They're organizing on the basis of Jewish identity, which is ethnic, it's genetic, it comes from the mother, and it's a distinct ethnic group. Ashkenazi Jews, Sephardic Jews, among others, Mizrahi Jews, there's many different types. There's a genetic basis, it's an ethnic national identity, and there's also this tradition, culture, religion, Yiddish and Hebrew, the book, the bar mitzvah, the stereotypes, all these types of things. So highly organized, a concentration of power and influence on the basis of their identity. And what is the purpose of these groups? What is the purpose of these organizations? Are they there to enjoy their Jewish traditions? Is it a big party where they enjoy Jewish food and Jewish music and they just kind of hang out? What are they actually there to achieve? Well, it seems that they are there to discuss and think about and advocate for what is in their political interest as a group. Like, let's say, for example, the Republicans hold the Republican National Convention. What are they there to do? They're there to say, they're gathered to discuss how do Republicans win? How do we beat the Democrats and have Republicans win? If you come together as a women's group, what are you there to do? If you're there at a women's leadership conference, you are there to talk about what's wrong with women or women's problems, let's say. and advocate what's best for women. You might talk about domestic abuse legislation. You might talk about abortion. You might talk about whatever. But it's by women, for women, as women, what's best for women. So what can we conclude about the World Jewish Congress? What is that? It's chaired by Ronald Lauder, a Jewish billionaire. And the president is a Rothschild, a member of the Rothschild banking family. The constituent members of the World Jewish Congress, the member organizations, are the B'nai B'rith Society, which is in bed with Israel, Hillel, which is a student group, the Jewish Lawyers Association, the ADL, the World Zionist Organization. Now, we can also say at the same time, is every Jewish person in the world a member of these groups or wielding power? No. But it doesn't mean that these groups don't exist. And they are claiming to represent, and I think legitimately so, because of their power, the global Jewish community. Irrespective of nationality, borders, ideology, religion, they all come together as Jews of the world, members of the Jewish tribe. And, you know, people can say, well, not every Jewish person is in it. Okay, but like all the Jewish billionaires are. So who speaks for the Jewish nation? The Jewish billionaires and the powerful Jewish people in banking, Hollywood, finance, or like some guy that claims to be 3% Jewish at your work, you know? So we have to deal with this. We have to deal with this, which is that this is identity politics. They're organized on their Jewish identity. That's how they're not organizing as religious people, as Abrahamics, as people of the book, as Israelis like Kudniks, as Reform or Orthodox. They're organizing as Jewish people worldwide. They're organizing for the benefit of those Jewish people. What's best for us? Not as Americans, Germans, not as religious people, not as conservatives. What is best for Jews? And they come together with their position, with their resources, to dedicate themselves in this personal mission. They're all advocates. So when, let's say, Antony Blinken is at the State Department, when he visits Israel, he says, I'm not just here as an American diplomat, I'm here as a Jew. Well, what does that mean? When Ronald Lauder sells his perfumes and makes billions of dollars, he's not just a perfume salesman or an American businessman, he's Jewish. He's an advocate. And the same goes for the rest of it, okay? Now, we have to deal with this as a political reality. Do you think that this might be a reason, this dynamic might be a reason why there is such a double standard between the Holocaust and every other genocide, between anti-Semitism and every other kind of hate speech, between support for Israel and support for any other ally? Think about all the double standards. You can be racist against whites, blacks, Hispanics, Indians, but not Jews. You can debate the merits or the facts of the Armenian genocide, of the Yazidi genocide, of the Kurdish genocide. You can go down the list, but not the Holocaust. That has a dogma that is enforced in museums everywhere. You can debate whether we should support Saudi Arabia, Qatar, NATO, Japan, but not Israel. Do you think that this highly racially loyal group, highly organized, with concentrated power, going into the world asking what is good for us as a group, you think that might have to do with it? We have to deal with this. And by the way, and by deal with this, I mean from an intellectual point of view. We can't just say we're going to ignore that. We have to engage these facts if we're going to understand how the world works and if we're going to understand how to change politics. We have to deal with this intellectually. As inconvenient as it is, it's an uncomfortable conversation, but it's there. So what do you call this? I call this organized Jewry. It's Jewish organizations. It's very powerful Jews organizing on the basis of their Jewishness for their benefit. I call it world Jewry. It's not just Israel. It's Jewish people in America, Europe, Asia, Latin America. It's not just Israel. It's not just people caring about Israel. It's people about It's people caring about Jews wherever they are across the entire globe. And that is how we must engage with this. We cannot say that any insinuation that groups exist, that groups, that individuals self-identify as members of groups, and that groups act. Groups act in institutions for distinct interests. We can't say that all of that is blood guilt. Tucker Carlson says that to speak in these terms is to reject the universalism of the Christian religion and what the West is founded upon. I disagree. I completely disagree. We can speak about these things without engaging in blood guilt, without engaging in collective punishment. Because this is reality. These are facts. Now, what we do with the facts is another question. But these are the facts. As it happens, this is how people self-identify. This is how people act in the world. This is how we understand politics. And so anyway, so you have these meetings, the World Jewish Congress, the North American Jewish Federation, the Jewish Leadership Fund. It's Jewish people coming together on the basis that they're Jewish, asking what is best for us. I'll also say one last thing. This is why this is so maybe remarkable. It's because the premise of Western civilization right now, the post-World War II consensus, is that everybody, and in particular white people, cannot do the same thing. Right? The post-World War II consensus is that you cannot organize on the basis of race because that leads to the Holocaust. Example, if I got up and said, I am for a white power organization, we're going to have a white conference, only white people are allowed, and we want to do what is best for whites. We want all white people from all around the world to come here, all white billionaires, all white influencers, all white politicians. We want to come together in a big convention and we want to use our power to do what's best for whites only. How can whites protect our interests as a group? Like, what would you call me if I did that? You would call me a Nazi. And why the Nazism leads to Holocaust. So we can't do that. You have to leave your racial identity at the door. And as a matter of fact, we have to let in immigrants. America's not white. Europe is not white. Whiteness doesn't exist. Whiteness doesn't matter. Whiteness isn't real. So this is the political dynamic. It's that the Western world was white, is no longer. Why? Because we can't defend our racial identity. We can't identify as whites. We can't protect our interests as whites. We can't organize as whites against this invasion from the third world, where they are hostile to our culture. They're attacking our heroes, our monuments, our holidays, our religion, our culture. They assault us physically. They're diluting our representation in the country and then therefore our power over the institutions. But Jewish people do this while telling us that we can't do the same. Okay, so these are the various groups. They're getting together over the past few weeks and they're raising the alarm, as I said, about Tucker and Fuentes on the right and Zohran Mamdani on the left. This is from Information Liberation. It says, quote, Tikva's Jewish Leadership Conference brought together over 1,000 American Zionists on Sunday to fight, quote, Mamdani-style anti-Zionism being normalized on the left and the Tucker Fuentes cancer spreading on the right, according to Tikva's Avi Garson. So American Zionists at the Jewish Leadership Conference coming together to fight left-wing anti-Zionism, right-wing anti-Zionism. They gave their Herzl Prize to Ben Shapiro, Barry Weiss, and Dan Senor for using their positions to promote Jewish flourishing and Israeli sovereignty. Okay? They awarded Barry Weiss, a liberal lesbian female Jew in New York, at the New York Times, at the Free Press, and Ben Shapiro, a religious, conservative, Republican, Trump-supporting Jewish man. They gave both of them the Theodore Herzl Award for what? Using their position to promote Jewish flourishing and Israeli sovereignty. Not for promoting war, not for being neocons, for promoting the advancement of their people. Because Barry Weiss and Ben Shapiro don't have much in common, but they have one thing in common. Shapiro's a man, Barry's a woman. Shapiro is an Orthodox Jew. Barry, I don't know if she is religious. Shapiro's got a wife and kids, Israeli wife and kids. Barry is in a lesbian partnership. Shapiro's a Republican. Barry nominally is liberal. I don't know, actually. What do they have in common? Well, they're both Jewish. And they both want to advance the interests of Jews in America and Jews in Israel. And they're being rewarded for it by the Jewish Leadership Conference. Here's your award. Here's your Herzl Prize. Jonathan Silver, the chief programming officer for Tikva, said, quote, Ben Shapiro devoted an entire show to explaining why, in video clip after video clip, Tucker Carlson is the most virulent super spreader of vile ideas in America. The common theme throughout the talk was the importance of repudiating Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, and Candace Owens, especially by those in the conservative movement, according to Tally Goldschaft, one of the attendees. She said, Barry made a point of stating that J.D. Vance has yet to distance himself from Tucker Carlson, which remains quite disconcerting. Elise Stefanik also spoke about combating anti-Semitism at the event and attacked Governor Hochul as well as Mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani. The event was titled, Can the Jews Save the West? Palantir's Joe Lonsdale and his wife were also given awards. Israel First GOP mega donor Paul Singer is listed as a top donor. Other speakers listed for the event included Elliot Abrams, Ruth Wiss, and Trump's U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Mike Waltz. The Trump admin in September awarded Tikva with the largest grant in NEH history, $10.4 million to counter the pathology of anti-Semitism and to teach the Talmud. You could be forgiven if thinking that I wrote this, that I made this up. Okay, guys, so there's a Jewish leadership conference and Barry Weiss and Ben Shapiro won an award for putting Jews first and they attacked Tucker and Fuentes and Zohran Mamdani and Joe Lonsdale was there and Elliot Abrams was there and Trump gave them money to teach the Talmud, which hates Jesus. It sounds like the schizophrenic, allegedly, ravings of the most virulent anti-Semitic groypers on the show. But no, this happened in reality. And we could point out all these different connections, by the way. So let's just start with this. This is the Tikva Fund. The Tikva Fund, their major backer was Roger Hertog at one time. Tikva Fund gives a lot of sponsorships and grants and fellowships to up-and-coming political people. For example, Jacob Riesis, J.D. Vance's chief of staff, is a Tikva Fund fellow. The Tikva Fund gave a grant to the Shalem Center in Israel. The Shalem Center was founded by Yoram Hazony, who you might know. Yoram Hazony runs National Conservative Conference. Barry Weiss was trained at the Shalem Center after she graduated from Columbia in 2004. Barry Weiss received an award here. Barry Weiss is over at University of Austin in Texas, which was funded by Joe Lonsdale, who also received an award here. Joe Lonsdale was in the PayPal Mafia with Peter Thiel and David Sachs and many members of this current government. Lonsdale was the head of Stanford Review at Stanford at one point. Okay, so like all these people are connected. All of these people, and of course, Lonsdale is tight with Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel was a major backer of Vance. Peter Thiel is also on Barry Weiss's show. Vance has a chief of staff that was a Tikva fellow. Are you starting to sort of get the picture? All these people, right and left, are part of the same fake discourse. Barry Weiss is now running CBS. because David Ellison acquired Paramount in a purchase subsidized by his father, Larry Ellison, who was tight with the Trump administration and Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, the Trump administration which gave a grant to the Tikva Fund. These people are all connected. They're all connected. They're all going to a conference. It's called the Jewish Leadership Conference. They're giving each other awards. And it doesn't matter if they're right-wing or left-wing, Republican or Democrat, neocon or not. What they all can agree on is we need to advance the interests of Jews in America. We need to advance the interests of Israel. And these are the patronage networks across the board. And what they can agree upon, for example, in New York, Miriam Adelson FaceTimed into the conference. And she said, we want Elise Stefanik in the governor's mansion, replacing the Democrats. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they want a Republican mayor, someone like Cuomo, who's a center-left Democrat? Why do they want him as mayor of New York City? Eric Adams, the current mayor of New York City, was in Israel this week saying, I served you. I served you people. Why? Because New York City is the capital of world Jewry. More Jews live in New York City than any other city in the world. It's a fifth or a quarter of New York City's population is Jewish, including many of their most powerful billionaires like Bill Ackman, including their institutions like Columbia University, where Jewish students are 25% of the student body. And when you have pro-Palestine protesters at those universities, or you have a socialist mayor that wants to hurt the Jewish landlords by freezing the rents, that's going to hurt the capital of world Jewry. So that's why they were hell-bent on Cuomo. That's why they're hell-bent on getting Stefanik in charge of New York State. Stefanik was the one in Congress that hauled the president of Columbia and UPenn and Harvard before a congressional hearing last year and got all those people fired for tolerating so-called anti-Semitism on the campus. Do you see? This is the influence operation. This is the patronage network. They get together as a group on the basis of their identity as billionaires, as politicians, as influencers, as Silicon Valley moguls, as Trump administration officials. They get together on the basis of their ethnicity and they say, how can we combine? How can we combine our position and our influence to get what is best for us? You know, there's a word for that. It's called fascism. Like that, there's a word for that, actually, which is that if we have solidarity, if we work together as a group, if we bundle together, we're strong. It's like a form of fascism in a sense. It's racial, it's religious, there's a tinge of religious and racial supremacy. All the things that they say white people cannot have, all the things that they say for white people are evil, but for white people, it's evil. If white people work together on the basis of their culture, religion, civilization, well, what do the Jews have to say about that? You're a Nazi. Individualism is our way. That's what the West is all about. Identity politics is a poison, says Ben Shapiro. Then he goes to the Jewish Leadership Summit, where Miriam Adelson and Joe Lonsdale and Barry Weiss and Elise Stefanik and John Fetterman and Elliot Abrams and Roger Hertog and Jacob Riesis, you know, and the Tikva Fund, everybody's there talking about promoting Jewish flourishing and Israel and teaching the Talmud and giving each other Herzl prizes. This is the tension at the center of the West. This is what connects the issues of our time, which is that we have no sovereignty because of this oligarchy, and also that our race is being genocided, that we are besieged by migration. And it's not to say the Jews are doing white genocide, but it is to say we are being programmed to believe that identity politics is bad for whites. Because if we used identity politics, we're the biggest group in America, and we could repel the invasion. We would take pride in our country and who we are, and we would be able to say we have a right to determine who comes here. We like the way things are. This is the classic tension, which is liberalism for America, fascism for Israel. Multiculturalism and diversity for America, Jewish supremacy for Israel. Jewish supremacy among American Jews, but tolerance and diversity for everybody else. Identity politics and tribalism for the American Jewish community, but colorblind meritocracy for everybody else. That's the, we are basically be as a group, as Americans, we are basically being fed this propaganda that makes us vulnerable, things that are not good enough for them. Meanwhile, they protect their interests. Anyway, so this was the event. The article goes on. It says, remarkably, the videos of the Jewish Leadership Conference have still not been released to the American public. Nonetheless, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency shared some of what took place inside. Of note, the Jewish Telegraph Agency reported that Ben Shapiro, Barry Weiss, and Dan Senor discussed the threat of figures like Nick Fuentes. From JTA, Jewish conservatives are looking to J.D. Vance to draw a line against the anti-Semitic right he hasn't delivered. Ben Shapiro, Barry Weiss, and Dan Senor were mostly in lockstep as they condemned anti-Semitism on the right during an event for Jewish conservatives on Sunday. Despite their shared concern about Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes, they were divided on how to think about Vice President J.D. Vance. At Sunday's Tikva conference, Shapiro, the conservative political commentator, cautioned against dismissing the threat of figures like Fuentes, whom he called a basement dweller. Why don't you just call us a medieval peasant? Why don't you just call us goyim? Call us cattle. And the far-right influencer Andrew Tate and their influence on younger, more online generations. Shapiro said they haven't aged into the voting population yet. I think one of the things we have to be very careful of is trying to write that off as not a problem. Barry Weiss agreed, saying it's a great lesson of the left over the past 15 years that everything was downstream of online culture. Senor, responding to Weiss, agreed that Vance should say more about the rising tide. He said, I am patiently waiting for the vice president to come out like a number of other leaders have come out in recent weeks. He said, Senators Ted Cruz and Mitch McConnell have both criticized Heritage Foundation for standing by Carlson. Jonathan Silver, the moderator and Tikva's programming officer, cut in at one point, saying there's comfort to be had in the fact that elected leaders have acted in such a patriotic American way. Many attending the Tikva event seem to be waiting for a strong statement from Vance condemning Fuentes and Carlson. Neil Cooper said, I'm willing to be patient, but only so patient, regarding the comment about waiting for Vance to condemn anti-Semitism. Barry Weiss also told the Jewish Leadership Conference she'll be using her position at CBS News to counter voices like Nick Fuentes, Tucker Carlson, Andrew Tate, and Hassan Piker. She said, I don't think they represent the values or the worldview of the vast majority of Americans, said the self-described Jewish lesbian and Zionist fanatic. The theme continued at the Jewish Federations of North America General Assembly, where former Obama speechwriter Sarah Hurwitz lamented to the Federation that people are finding content from Al Jazeera and Nick Fuentes, seeing videos of the carnage in Gaza. She said Holocaust education backfired in part as people see Palestinians as victims of the Jews. She said they think the lesson of the Holocaust is you fight the big, powerful people hurting the weak people. She said that's the wrong lesson to draw. Something similar also went down at the World Jewish Congress, where the president, Ronald Lauder, said laws must be passed to ban anti-Semitism. He said big names with millions of followers are telling lies that Jews control the government, the media, and the nation's foreign policy. Lauder opened the event by giving the World Jewish Congress's Theodore Herzl Award to Elise Stefanik and John Fetterman for their service to Israel and opposition to anti-Semitism. How much clearer could it possibly be, honestly? Because you have on both sides, you have on the right and on the left. On the right, you have Christians who believe in human rights, Christians who believe in universalism, Christians who believe in mercy and compassion, Christians, and by the way, American patriots who believe in America first, against a foreign policy where we go out in entangling alliances in search of enemies to destroy. You've got people like Marjorie Greene, Tucker, Candace, me. We don't even all like each other. We don't agree on much or on everything. But we all come together and say, we don't want to see a genocide in Gaza. We don't want to see a war in Iran. On the other side, you have the progressive left. You've got Hassan Piker. You've got Anna Kasparian. You've got Zohran Mamdani. And they're saying, as liberals, they're saying this is an ethnic cleansing. A vulnerable people is being dispossessed of their land. They're being disenfranchised. They're being killed brutally without regard for human rights or international law. They're saying that offends our conscience. And what's more, we don't want to pay for it. And clearly, groups like AIPAC and billionaire oligarchs are bribing Congress, bribing the Republican Party to look the other way and support it. On the right and the left, we're also saying something to the effect of, we want to put America first. We don't want to fight Israel's enemies, and we don't want to pay a foreign government. We want to pay our own people. We want affordability. Right, left, and center, the people are suffering. Inflation is high. Prices remain high. We're in the midst of stagflation, a frozen job market. Giant question whether AI will deliver. The government's insolvent. On both sides, we want to prioritize a domestic agenda, a trade policy, an infrastructure program that is going to create good paying jobs for us, investing in public services. But we can't do that when we're fighting a war with Iran or giving Israel limitless missiles. And to this, you have Jews on the right and left. Okay, think of it. On the right and left outside of this, you've got Tucker, Marjorie, me, Candace, Christians. Christians and nationalists. On the left, you've got liberals. Liberals and progressives. Zohran, Hassan, Anna Kasparian. We're all saying something like America first, stop the genocide. But the Jewish community, right and left, Barry Weiss and Ben Shapiro, John Fetterman and Ted Cruz, Joe Lonsdale and the Adelsons, as well as other billionaires, as well as other people situated on the left, they're all saying, no, these guys are the problem. They're isolationists. The America Firsters are isolationists and backed by Qatar. The progressives, they just hate Israel. They're third worldists. And they're bankrolled by the Muslim Brotherhood. You've got the Marxist Islamists on one side. You've got the Qatari Nazi isolationists on the other. And we need to control the media. We need to buy CBS. We need to buy TikTok. We need to make anti-Semitism laws. We need to take back control over the governorship of New York, the presidency of Columbia University, the mayoralship of New York City. We need to wrest back control over the media, so that we can keep the gravy train flowing, so that we can keep Israel getting the missiles to defeat Hamas, keep Israel getting the support to defeat Iran and expand their country. And in order to do that, we need people not to criticize our influence in America, which purchases those things. Could it be any more clear? What else would Joe Lonsdale, Barry Weiss, Fetterman, Shapiro, what else would they all have in common other than that? And by the way, it's not all Jews. There are many Jews that are critical of this arrangement, like Dave Smith is a good example. And you've got many on the left, like Scott Horton, who's not even my biggest fan, and Jeffrey Sachs, who's been on Tucker and The Judge all the time. You know, there are actually Jewish people, Ron Unz, they criticize this arrangement. So it's not every single one. It's not a blood guilt, like you're born Jewish, you're part of it. But this organized influence, it does self-identify as Jewish. It does claim to represent the Jews, and it's hard to argue that they don't when they're the most powerful people in the world, actually. Mary Madelson is one of the richest people in the world. Ronald Lauder is one of the richest people in the world. Larry Ellison is the second richest man in the world. It's a powerful claim to represent them. And this is what is going on in the world. And so you have on the left, they are true liberals, and they are saying, hey, you guys aren't playing by the rules. You're not being universalist. You're not being liberal. You're not being liberal in your treatment of Palestinians. You're not being liberal in your tribalism and your race loyalty. You are not being liberal in the sense that you have power, and power is the basis of predatory behavior, let's say. And on the right, we're saying, well, you're telling us that we can't be tribalistic as whites. We can't defend our interests as whites and Christians. But this is what you do all the time. You're trying to moderate the right, tell us don't engage in identity politics. But you do it all the time. This is the current arrangement. This is the situation. And understand, the Jewish right and left are working together. And they want the American right and left to fight each other. They want to press the division between the progressive left and the radical right. They want to go to the radical right and say, you're allying with a bunch of Muslim communists. You're not pure right enough. You're allying with the Muslim communists and immigrants. You're allying with the brown people and the Muslims and their call to prayer and their socialist agenda, their race communism. You can never talk to them. And on the left, they're going to the left and saying, you're going to ally with those white supremacist Nazis. You're going to ally with Tucker and Nick Fuentes and Andrew Tate, these misogynist, racist, anti-Semites. You're going to ally with the KKK Nazis over there. They want to keep us divided. That is what it's built on. Meanwhile, they observe none of these standards. The Jews are not liberal. They're not progressive in the way that progressives expect them to be. And the Jews are not right-wing. They're not Christian. They don't put America first. They're not nationalistic in the way that we want them to be. And yet they want us to see the left as the enemy. And so they say Shapiro and Cruz and Elise Stefanik and Joe Lonsdale, these are yours. And John Fetterman and Barry Weiss, these belong to the left. And so left-wing progressives and left-wingers are supposed to see Barry Weiss as a reasonable liberal running CBS, and the right is supposed to see Ben Shapiro as a reasonable conservative running Daily Wire. This is what is going on. And that's why we're controlling the narrative and we're standing up and saying, I don't even want to be called right-wing insofar as I am just America first. All I care about is that Americans take the power back. That's the question. We don't want to hurt you. We don't want to deprive you of your rights. I will go on the record if it needs to be said and say I do not want a Holocaust. Honestly, I'm a Catholic. If I, as a Catholic, profess that, I would be on the ninth level of hell. I do not want a Holocaust. I do not want to take people's rights away. I don't want to hurt people. You know, they say it's going to be Kristallnacht. If anything, I've said the opposite. I've said do not verbally or physically abuse these people. Treat them with respect. I said we should protect their rights and their dignity and all the rest of it. What we are going to do, what we need to do is take the power back because they're abusing the power. We're going to take the power back as Americans. That's what I'm concerned with. And you can give the left their free health care, and you can give the right their closed borders. You can do what you need to do. But Americans need to take the power back from Larry Ellison, Roger Hertog, from Ronald Lauder, from Miriam Adelson. These are billionaire oligarchs that are not America first, but they're so rich and they use their money to buy the media market. They use their money to buy the politicians to serve their ethnic self-interest. And there's nothing American about that. Right, left, or center, there's nothing American about that. Billionaire oligarchs, the richest in the world, they made their fortune here off the backs of Americans. They abuse their citizenship. They abuse their power. They're abusing the political system to buy access, to buy influence, to support another country. Forget it. You know, people are busy debating what is an American? What does it mean to be American? I know what isn't American. If you're from Israel and you're putting Israel first. I don't know whether Gil Scott Heron's American. I don't know whether Malcolm X is American. I don't know whether MLK Jr. is American. people are debating, well, what is American? I know what isn't. An Israeli citizen like Miriam Adelson using her money in the American system to benefit only Israel. I know that much. And I know that's got to change. And we could deal with all the poor people in America that live within our borders, whatever they think and wherever they're from. We could deal with that later. First, we have to take the power back from the oligarchs that are literally serving a foreign country. And we can agree on that first step, and then whatever happens after, I don't even care if we live in a liberal country at that point. At least it'd be ours. So that's the real situation. That's what and they want to call it, oh, that's National Socialism. Oh, that's Hitler. Pardon me, but the problem with Hitler is the Holocaust. We're not talking about that. We are talking about putting our own damn country first. There's nothing evil about that. There's nothing inherently National Socialist about that, whatever that even means. And everyone can agree on that. All Americans living in our borders, all of them can agree on that. And people have a problem with me saying that. But I'm talking about, let's bring everybody together on the basis of, we just don't want a foreign country ruling us. Then we can make it more divisible after that, if we want to. But let's first say how egregious it is. You've got people here that, yeah, they got a problem with Thomas Jefferson. That's pretty un-American. But at least they've lived here for generations. These other people come here, they put another country first. Step one, put America back in the hands of Americans. Put America back in the hands of people, not billionaire oligarchs, people that are loyal to America. Alone, only. That's first. So I see this stuff at these conferences, and I that's why I feel like Tucker is sort of gaslighting us in a certain sense. And I like Tucker. I support what he's doing. But he brings me on the show to teach me not to be anti-Semitic. I don't know what that means. I'm just paying attention, man. You want to tell me what that's all about? What is the World Jewish Congress? And all these people, Tucker, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, like as good as they are on the issue, they all want to pathologize me and my followers. They all want to say, why are people following Nick? Because of what we just talked about. Because I'm right, and I'm the only one talking about this. And there are plenty of happy people and married people and well-adjusted people that are persuaded by this because it's true. It's not all unhappy, bitter people that internalized hatred, that it's some sort of malfunction why they believe these politics. It's because it's true. And you can't give me that same speech about blood guilt when we see week after week, Republican Jewish Coalition, Organization of Major Jewish Organizations, North American Jewish, and everyone, it's a rerun. It's the same people on the same basis for the same purpose. Well, we're being told identity politics is a sin. Whites are being replaced. We're becoming an alien in our own country. We're being told our country doesn't matter. Our culture doesn't matter. We have Vivek Ramaswamy saying, identity politics suck. Really? Then why'd you marry an Indian? Why did you name your kids Indian names? Maybe because being Indian is important to you. We're going to be told identity politics sucks by Ben Shapiro with his Israeli wife and his Israeli kids in a 90% Jewish neighborhood while he spends his life advocating for Israel, and he'll fire you if you don't. And Tucker thinks the answer is we got to plead with Mark Levin to give up identity politics. No, no, white people, don't embrace identity politics. We need to speak to all the ordinary Jewish people. Okay, well, the ordinary Jewish people aren't worth $300 billion buying CBS, okay? So they can be as mad. We don't really, they can believe whatever they want. The Yoram Mazonis, the Barry Weisses, the Larry Ellisons, they will operate regardless. And they're never giving this up. So is the solution to wait for Barry Weiss to stop being race loyal? Is the answer to wait for Jewish people to assimilate? Oh, good luck. They had been moved around for thousands of years and they never assimilate. They obstinately refuse to assimilate. And, you know, and I'm fine with that. But then they can't tell us that we have to wait for them to do this. That's not a program that's going to work. We have to wait while our race is killed for Jews to give up their tribalism. I don't think so. No, the answer to this is whites and Christians have to organize on the same basis. Whites, Christians, Americans have to organize on the same basis. First as Americans and say, take the power from these billionaires. Then as Christians and whites and say, America has a distinct identity. The Romans, the Greeks, the Enlightenment, the Age of Exploration, the Renaissance, this is who we are. The Jews have, they have a glorious past. They have a great tradition. So do we, and we want ours too. Let Israel be Israel, let Rome be Rome. Anyway, so that's all that. That's in a nutshell, that's what I believe. And I find it so hard to understand why people can't wrap their head around this. How can you watch a show like this and say that this is based out of irrational hatred, prejudice? In The Atlantic, I got in an argument with the journalist that wrote a piece about me. He said, let's talk about your bigotry. Is that bigotry? Is that obstinate prejudice and hatred on the basis of race? I don't think so at all, actually. I think this is just an engagement with the political reality of the time. We're reading what they say. We're talking about what they do. We're just being realistic about it. So this has been there. This has been the Tucker cost. This has been the campaign. And it is a response to them losing control over the narrative. And these influencers like Hassan Piker and Andrew Tate rising up. People like Tucker and me and Candace and Marjorie. And on the other side, Ilhan Omar and Zohran Mamdani and Cenk and Anna Kasparian criticizing Israel, criticizing this Israel-U.S. Jewish relationship, the American Jews who are headquartered in New York that have power, their accomplices in Israel, working together to subvert our system for the benefit of their own community. And so this is their response to all that. It's in a paranoid and aggressive way to assert their Jewish interests, using their position, their resources against it. And we have to simply say no. Whites and Christians have to say no, like we're not going to be pushed around. And all Americans need to say, not just whites and Christians, but all Americans need to say we're not going to be pushed around by this small group. We're not going to be pushed around or bribed or bought or manipulated by this group that only cares about their own country and sees themselves as in a siege, surrounded by enemies, suspicious and distrusting of everybody, hostile to anyone that criticizes them. Keeping everything all in the family. You know, that's not the American way that you yourselves pushed on everybody else.